Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It seems to be a perennial problem. People don't trust the media. In fact, the trust for the media is at an all-time low, and that's really saying something. Seems as though the more the media proliferates, the more different ways it brings us information, the less and less people trust it, is a major factor in the American distrust of the media. The fact that the media still doesn't get religion. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He joins us to talk about media coverage of religion on the 13th anniversary of GetReligion.org, where he is founder and editor. He's also senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Well, happy birthday to GetReligion.org. In the last decade or so, have you seen any progress in the media's ability to find and to cover religion?
Do you have some sort of like really sad country song or something that you could just like slam in right now and cue that up to serve as some appropriate background music?
We probably could.
Well, please search for that. It might help me out here. I think the long and the short of that is that there is no consistent pattern, but that there are positive signs that if you hire religious professionals and let them do their job, they can get it done. Meanwhile, there doesn't seem to be that much evidence that editors and newsroom managers feel the need to do that, so that they continue to have, the kind of embarrassing stuff that makes it possible for us to do a website for 13 years and have something to write about every day. But at the same time, it seems like for a lot of editors in elite newsrooms, they don't even realize the problem is there, or it keeps coming back like a really nasty gnat that flies around their eyes and their nose, and they keep waving. Every semester in the New York Journalism Semester program up at the King's College, I have my students in the very first session that we do with new content, I have them read the New York Times self-study of 2005, which we have discussed many times here, and which I continue to try to urge people to read. You know, I get religion in numerous pieces. I quote it all the time. And the whole point of having my students do that was to get them to see that almost any discussion of major problems in journalism, whether it's diversity, whether it's lack of quality, if the public is going to be consulted and you're going to ask the public what are some of the things about the press that drive you crazy, the New York Times, other elites, whatever, if you ask the public about this, religion shows up. And it almost always shows up in the context of subjects that the press doesn't handle well, or that it handles poorly, or it shows up with hot-button topics linked to media bias, whether it's coverage of abortion, marriage, sexuality, you know, et cetera. So, I mean, I'm not really cheerful about this. It was interesting for the editor of the New York Times, you know, a couple of weeks ago to say, in the wake of the election, we just don't get it. We don't get religion. We don't seem to understand the role religion plays, you know, in people's lives. That's a part of why we had trouble understanding this election. Well, what election would that not apply to? in the last 25 years. Post Jimmy Carter, come up with an election in American public life when there wasn't major discussions of moral, social issues, religion, etc. I mean, you would have thought somewhere along there people would say it's time for systematic change. But systematic change is hard, especially in an era when you've got financial problems like the press has right now, and there's no painless way to cut a shrinking pie. So I don't think I can give you a very cheerful answer on that right now.
How big a factor is the failure of the media to get religion, even an admitted failure of the media to get religion, in the other thing that's being observed, which is Americans, and in particular evangelicals, but Americans in general, don't trust the media?
Well, I've been saying this since the early 80s. I mean, I ran into a study way, way back, soon after the cooling of the Earth's crust. You know, when I was writing my project at the University of Illinois and the graduate program there, and it noted that the more people were involved in their local communities, the more people were a part of the stable, foundational life of cities, towns, etc., the longer they tended to be a part of those communities, the more likely they were to be religiously active. And what that told me is that when you consistently mess up religion, you're messing up stuff that matters to the core foundational people in around you, to the salt of the earth folks that kind of help make your community run. Whatever their individual faith is, the statistics in this study back in the late 70s, early 80s, indicated that that was one of the characteristics. And by the way, those people were most likely to be people who took a newspaper and subscribed to it for a long period of time, because that's the sort of thing people do when you're a part of a community for year after year after year after year. You take the local paper, right, because you want to read what's going on in your community. So when you tick those people off, you're ticking off core newspaper readership. Here in East Tennessee, I can just give you an anecdote from earlier today. My son and I went out to breakfast after a church service. We're sitting in our booth, and we're listening. You know how you try not to listen to people in restaurants, but it's hard not to? There was a circle of people at a table just like one row away that were talking about the local newspaper and what drove them crazy about it, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, religion, politics, all that stuff kind of goes all into the mix with this aching sense that the newspaper just doesn't understand local people. You know, I wish I could tell you that was, you know, uncommon for me to hear things like that, but I guess maybe I would hear it more often, you know, since I'm the religion guy. In this case, I went over and introduced myself, and three of the four of the people recognized me immediately from my column sig, because it runs in the Knoxville newspaper. You know, and immediately they all had stories. They all had things to say. They all had examples. These were newspaper readers, really hardcore members of the community. Religion mattered to them. Their community mattered to them. Their newspaper mattered to them, and things just weren't adding up. I think editors need to know about that. I mean, and we think of these issues being really important. Often elite liberal cities like New York, you know, and Washington. You know what? The New York Times probably represents the worldview of people who live in New York pretty well. A lot of its problems come with the rest of America. A study done a couple of decades ago said if you're looking for a really huge divide between journalists and the people for whom they write, you need to hit cities elsewhere in America. And it cited as examples of cities where there were newspaper subscriptions and the popularity of the newspapers was in collapse. It cited as cities where the divide between editors and their readers were worst. It cited Dallas and Atlanta and other places in the Sun Belt. So this isn't just a New York, L.A. thing or something like that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion on this Thursday afternoon, February the 2nd. Well, GetReligion.org started 13 years ago as part of its goal to so to speak, put itself out of business if it were successful. Stay tuned. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religion. On this day, the 13th anniversary of GetReligion.org, where he is founder and editor. He's also senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. Terry, 13 years ago, when you guys started GetReligion.org, was part of your goal to be successful and therefore, so to speak, put yourself out of business?
You know, I never thought that would happen. But I did think if we could get the, I mean, we were at the already entering a period of crisis in newspaper funding back then. And I think there are newsrooms that would do a better job on religion if they had a lot of spare money laying around to spend on it. The problem is that when you really press a newsroom and you have to cut positions and things get tight, this is when you really, really get the worldview of the people who run those places in terms of where they prioritize the spending of that money. But you know what? I do feel an urge to say something positive here for a second. After Donald Trump hit CNN up against the side of the head with a 2x4 on the subject of coverage for March for Life, you know, we were, some of us were kind of curious to know, well, what would the coverage look like this year? And there were places where it was as bad as normal or whatever. But and then there were places like, frankly, at the Washington Post, where I guess with having just covered the Women's March on D.C. a couple of days earlier, they probably anticipated that there was going to be extensive comparison of the coverage of these two events. And boy, oh boy, they went pedal to the metal covering March for Life this year. And I've heard lots of compliments about what they did, that if anything, they overcovered it. But they had every conceivable angle. They had angles that liberals would want to read about. They had angles that conservatives would want to read about. And part of that is that Vice President Pence was there. I think we have to admit that. Having the Vice President of the United States, the first time this has ever happened at March for Life, having the Vice President show up, said to editors, this is real, this matters, which means we're back to one of the rules of this that you and I talk about all the time, which is politics is the only thing that's real. If you want to symbolize or signal the importance of something, you got to have a political hook for it. And that disappointed me, but you know what? At least it got done. The Washington Post had very provocative and interesting coverage, and even went live video for large parts of the day. And if journalism works when you try it, if you get professionals and you get editors who want to think their way through this and say, well, if I was on this side of the issue and I was on this side of the issue, what are some of the stories that I might be interested in that we could see happen this day? I think I'll assign this number of reporters. We'll have the following resources. Journalists can get this stuff down. We get all kinds of negative straw man comments at Get Religion, which we always spike, where people just attack journalists and swing and scream and say they're stupid, et cetera. No, these people are not stupid. These are smart professionals who don't understand completely how middle America works, runs, and talks, you know, in these elite newsrooms. And religion is a key factor in that. And boy, oh boy, are we in the middle of a hot discussion of all of that right now here in America when it comes to journalism.
One of the things that struck me as I was just watching some of the coverage, and I agree it was much better this year, of the March for Life. I'm trying to think like kind of a secular-minded reporter here. You saw Catholics, Orthodox, Protestants of every stripe, atheists, Jews. There was a Lesbians for Life. There's a Feminists for Life. You saw, for lack of a better word, an ecumenical gathering there that didn't necessarily just include collar-wearing Catholic priests or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're faithful. In Washington, D.C., very few things unite. We, at Lutherans, we call that cooperation in externals. Very few things unite people like the issue that was marched for in the March for Life.
It also, once again, I just think people have to understand the degree to which the voices of women, especially young women, are absolutely crucial to the story of abortion and to the story of the pro-life movement. I still think one of the events that people need to consider getting out to, because it would be an opportunity to deal with one side of the stereotype, but you know, sometimes stereotypes are stereotypes because there's truth there. I still think one of the least covered parts of the March for Life that deserves more coverage is the gigantic mass that is held the night before in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. Now, I want you to think your way through this for a second just as a news story. First of all, you've got the setting. If you want photography, if you want beauty, here you are in one of the world's 5, 6, 7 largest churches, a stunning setting. And this thing is packed totally out. And I would say that 80% of the people in the pews are college students who have come from all over America. There are several other things that go on during this night. There's a vigil. They pray pretty much all night. The Basilica, I believe, I know this was true a couple of years ago. I believe it's still true. The Basilica lets them sleep there. A lot of these college students come with sleeping bags and stuff like that. And so you have like the world's basilica-sized bed and breakfast, I mean, so to speak, set up before this thing. I also believe a lot of priests offer themselves as an opportunity for college students to go to confession while they're there that night and all through the hours of the night leading up to the march the next day. So you have this stereotype that only Catholics care about abortion. Well, you know what? That just hadn't been true, first of all, for several decades now. But when you actually look at the American public, Catholics of all kinds, including inactive Catholics and cultural Catholics, Catholics of all kind may be more liberal on abortion right now than evangelical Protestants or Mormons. So to some degree, it's a chance to take a story and stand it on its head and say, okay, who are these young Catholics for whom this issue matters so much. And they're here every year. They're here wearing the colors of their school. What schools are here? What schools are not here? I found it interesting. A few people noticed this year that I don't think Georgetown, again, allowed students to have time off to go to the march. Whereas, you know, like your normal Catholic college not only did that minimal kind of support, but did a lot more. There are just so many stories linked to this. Even the obvious ones sometimes don't get covered. And that's part of why our blog continues to roll on and on and on, and we will keep trying.
Talk about an interchange that's taking place in the pages, at least the Washington Post and elsewhere, between Alex Wilgus and one of your erstwhile colleagues at Get Religion, Sarah Pulliam Bailey.
Huh. Well, that was really interesting. The piece I put up today, marking the 13th birthday. I mean, we're a teenager now. The blog is a teenager. I raised the question. You know, if a dog's life is 7 years to that of a human, what's a blog life? I mean, 13 years is a long time in the field of social media to be around and doing the same thing day after day after day. I don't think we've ever had a day without a post in 13 years. So anyway, the post I put up celebrating the 13th, part of it, about half the contents, was an essay that was in the Common Vision that basically said, it was responding to Sarah's very interesting and much discussed post saying that if evangelicals keep falling for fake news, that's bad, they need to learn to respect journalism, etc. And very calmly, this young Anglican writer wrote a post in which he essentially said, let's look at this from the point of view of evangelicals. Why do evangelicals distrust the media so much? And he gives, in addition to what he later called a love letter to Get Religion for what we do, he also offers this very interesting case study of National Public Radio and the interview with the author of I Kissed Dating Goodbye, Josh Harris, from a number of years ago. And he walks through the framing of a story and tries, as a layperson, he tries to think about, in the eyes of journalists, in their minds, what makes a story a story? And he ends up saying that many of the stories that launch out into our papers are stories simply because journalists can only see evangelical Christians through a negative lens. If they're traditional evangelical Christians. Of course, the fastest way to get a positive story is to be an evangelical Christian who criticizes evangelicals or something like that. They get you on page one really quick. But I thought it was very interesting and nuanced. I wouldn't try to simplify it here, you know, in the podcast and in terms of talking about these things, but I really appreciated the effort. I wish I had time to talk to Sarah about it right now, but I'd just say that Donald Trump is giving the people at the Washington Post in the fields of religion and politics a lot of work to do right now. So maybe this would be a good time to let Sarah do the job she does so well and carry on.
We have just a couple minutes here, Terry. We recently talked about Stephen Bannon saying that the press should...
Yeah, the listen quote.
Yeah, listen, kind of be quiet and listen for a while. And it sounds... with about a week's perspective here, that he might be onto something, especially when it comes to coverage of religion.
Well, it's possible. At the same time, I mean, don't forget, I was so distressed during the weekend of the Muslim ban. I was distressed by the policy. I was distressed by how messed up and what a train wreck it was, the image I used at Get Religion. At the same time, I was distressed that the press once again responded to the rhetoric of Trump and Bannon instead of pausing and actually reading the policy itself and seeing what it said. The policy actually actively protected some Muslim minorities. So instead of being a Muslim ban, it was in some ways an attempt to protect religious minorities that included Muslim sex. Now, that doesn't make it a perfect policy. I'm not even saying I approved of it all. What I'm saying is, folks, whatever we do with religion and journalism, we're going to have to start by getting our facts right. We're going to have to get our quotes right. We're going to have to listen to what people are actually saying and calm down. Write down. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway and others are all writing brilliantly on this. Calm down. Get the basics done. Can we at least try that?
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. And he is founder and editor of the 13-year-old GetReligion.org. Terry, happy birthday to the blog, and thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Folks, we've been promoting Issues, Etc. Books of the Month for two decades, and one of the most popular has been Ladylike, Living Biblically. Well, it's now available on an audiobook. It's read by the authors Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel, and it was recorded and produced right here at Lutheran Public Radio. You can purchase and download Concordia Publishing House's new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically, at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll discuss methods of contraception with Dr. Donna Harrison and a pastoral perspective on contraception with Dr. Richard Stuckwish. And we'll continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions, talking with Pastor Paul McCain about the apology to the Augsburg Confession, an introduction. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Registration for the 2017-18 school year is now open at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. St. Paul is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. Come check out our pre-kindergarten and elementary school, where worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis are interwoven with direct academic instruction. Kindergarten visitation day is Thursday, February 2nd. Open house is Sunday, February 12th. Find out more at school.stpaulhamel.org.
Come listen to Drs. Alvin Schmidt and Roland Elke at the 3rd Annual Concordia Apologetics Conference, Cultures in Collision, Faith and a Fractured World, this March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin. You can register online at www.cuw.edu/apologetics or call 262-243-4343. That's the Concordia Apologetics Conference, March 3rd and 4th at Concordia University, Wisconsin.